Hello, welcome to the Double Bonus. My name is Finn. You can find me at FinDraft on Twitter. And today I'm here with Muhammad. You can find him at MCFNBA on Twitter. How you doing today, man?
Hey man, thanks so much for having me. Doing great. How about you?
Doing great. I'm excited. This has been a long time in the making. I'm
Yes,
glad we
sir. It's
finally getting it out there. We're gonna be talking bigs today. We're gonna like go through our preliminary rankings for guys as of now, give little updates. I know Mo, you released the preseason board. I'll leave, the link to all of his information in the description of this pod. I released the preseason board as well. Have your thoughts changed a good bit from where you were at in preseason, or not really?
For me, specific to the big men class, I think I've pointed out, I think it was like four to five big men that were in my initial top 25. And I released a preliminary board in like June, July. And that was kind of my feel out board preseason, just pre NCAA. And I knew there was like some FIBA prior to that. So just kind of wanted to see some guys in that tournament. But really hasn't changed much, I think. In terms of the mid pack of the group, it's kind of like just elevated, seeing more tape, seeing a lot more from either for the freshmen, more from the pre NCAA side, and then kind of the guys that coming into the season, I was already looking at. Not much has really changed. I already really felt high about these guys, so not much swing with the bigs.
Yeah, I mean, I think my thoughts have changed a bit just because of like you get to see these guys where their minutes are at currently. I think that matters a ton, like where they're being played. I guess we'll just go off your board. I mean, I don't really think my thoughts have changed that much since the start of preseason. I moved guys up and down, obviously, now that we've gotten to see their translation, but your first big on your board was Jaden Quaintance. Now, obviously, we haven't gotten to see him, so we'll move on to your second guy. You had Pat Ngangba on this most recent post, December 3rd. What are your thoughts on him so far? What's your like overall analysis of his game at this point in the season?
Yeah, I mean, with a guy like Patrick Ngangba, sophomore at Duke, I mean, he's really been kind of this quiet emerger and probably like my dark horse as my favorite big in this class. And it goes without stating, he is a guy that it doesn't look pretty, but it gets done. And I think when you look at his skill set, he has so many NBA translatable skills. I think most notably his passing feel. I think that's one thing that gets me immediately enamored when looking at his tape. A guy that he can play out on the perimeter. He's a guy that can play out through the post, and he just really has a high level feel for the game. This was some of the early discussions that I was having last season for last cycle, and I was like, this is a guy. I don't know 100% sure if he's going to be a one and done, especially playing behind Flag and come on Mala watch. But there were some glimpses throughout the season where I was like, when I was looking at guys like, for example, at Kansas, Flory Badunga, I was like, yo, I'm kind of having these two guys in that same echelon. And, I always will end up having a Ngangba beat him out just because of the feel. I know I was mentioning with you when I dropped my board that, he had a previous foot injury coming into his collegiate career, and that was something that was really weary. But I think being able to just look past the injury aside, I mean, there's just a lot to love with his game. I got a guy 6'10", 6'11", super, super fluid for his size, very strong vertical threat. I think he's a guy that is very athletic, plays above the rim with his game, both ends of the floor, high level rebounder. I think one thing that actually intrigues me just probably as much as the passing is kind of the event creation. He's somebody that really makes an impetus to, create a lot of blocks, gets his hand on some deflection steals, and he's kind of been that anchor that Duke's been looking for this season. So yeah, a lot to like with Ngangba from a defensive perspective and kind of just him with the ball in his hands. I think one of my gripes with him, and it may not necessarily be specific to him, but kind of the system at Duke, is how he's being played. And you're seeing a lot of him not being in the post and kind of having that face up or kind of the dominant game that you anticipated from him pre-NCAA, where he's playing a lot more out on the perimeter, doing a lot of DHO actions, just offering himself as a role man, which I mean he's been very effective at. I believe he's in the 90th, like 97, 96 percentile in the nation when it comes to cutting as well as PR role man points per possession. So he's been very, very effective at just, doing his job and getting the ball in the rim. But yeah, he's definitely been my dark horse big this season. And, he's just been effective doing his job. And I think one of the biggest things with Ngangba, a lot of people aren't going to like it because it's not flashy. You know, it's not the high level shooting, or it's, you know, not the jumping out. For him, he's somebody that is very technical in his approach. And, you know, I think people have to understand he lost a lot of weight from, you know, his freshman year to his sophomore year. And you could see he's playing more into his frame, and yeah, just a lot to like. And now, especially with the shot, you know, it's crazy to note he only took one 3-point attempt in his freshman season, compared to so far 14, only making four. You know, of course, I think seeing the confidence grow in his perimeter shot, it definitely gets you enticed with all those kills that he has. Adding that perimeter shot is going to just take his whole offense to another dimension. So I think, you know, getting a chance to see how he plays throughout the season, definitely going to be monitoring closely. And he definitely is somebody that could be in that potential number one center shift, as we head into conference play. But I'm all in on Patrick Ngongwa as one of the best prospects in this class. Definitely going to be teetering towards top 10 territory for me. So yeah, what about you?
Man, I love Big Pat. I'm very Big Pat top three curious right now. I know I sent this to the chat, I think last week or sometime earlier this week. And the first reaction was like, oh my God, what the hell are you talking about? But then you look at the overall profile, right? And you get your mind jogging a bit. I mean, his most used play type so far has been cuts. He's got 22 cut possessions on the season, so like you're gonna put a guy like in your top three that's like very very assisted, like very questionable creator. I mean, right now on post-ups he's in the 90th percentile in points per possession, and that's, as you mentioned, with the priors. He has excellent post-up priors, incredible footwork. You know, I think it looks like he's cut down weight, you know, a decent bit. He looks a lot more mobile. In his last game, he had two threes and they both went in, right? You were mentioning the 3-point volume. Like, he's at a, you know, close to a 23-point rate, which is just a pretty stark change. He's actually over 20 right now. So that's like 4 threes per 100. He's not shooting well in them, but the volume is what I care about. The volume plus the free throw touch, he's at 77% from the line. So we have like clear touch. You mentioned the feel, 1.4 assist to turnover ratio after being 2-to-1 last year. Might have been 3-to-1. It was so few games, but he draws fouls at a high clip. Great offensive rebounder. A little bit, couple lapses in the defensive glass. I think that's just, you know, Duke's scheme. It happened with Malawach last year. I think it's definitely a problem. It hasn't been elite at any level. I think that's honestly what I've been scared of most is the defensive rebounding against comp. But I mean, outside of that, like, I had my friend Avi. He was talking to me about, Ngongwa a couple days ago, and he's like, who is the he's the highest feel big since who? And he asked me that, and I was like, I don't really know, like probably Şengün in recent memory. Like,
I probably go out and say that on a limb. Probably Şengün. If me, so I definitely don't know. It's not the last two classes.
yeah, like I can't think of any like high minute center that was at the top of any draft class that had this level of feel. And then the measurables are not anything to snuff at either. I mean, he's listed 6'11", reported 7'4" wingspan. Obviously, we're going to get better measurements later in the year. But you know, you hear all these things like complete offensive package, great footwork, good shooter, good passer, or whatever. Normally, centers that have that skill integration, they don't tend to be like super elite rim finishers. He's finishing 80% at the rim right now, and he's also not blocking shots at the clip that you'd expect. I mean, I don't think he's like the greatest rim protector. Would you agree that like that's definitely
100%.
something to work on?
You know, I think, again, as you mentioned, a lot of it with the scheme, you know, you are seeing a guy like Boozer be that anchor, of course, with the mobility. And, you know, this is kind of where you're seeing the inverse, where you're probably seeing a lot more of that stock creation with a guy like Boozer. But I think when it comes to like the defensive field goal percentage, as well as even the numbers with the on-offs, I think I seen a tweet today. I can't remember who mentioned it, but Cam Boozer's, I do remember who it was. It was by Draft Pal, Matt Powers, I think, from Swish Theory. He was mentioning Cam Boozer's on-offs and how everything scales up when Pat Ngong was off the floor. And that's not to say that he's a lousy rim protector, but that is to say that I think playing through Boozer as your anchor defensively is a lot more rewarding, and that's where you're able to see a lot more improvements in stock numbers in terms of defensive field goal percentage. And then Duke is just a clear better rebounding team with him on the court, off with Ngongba. So I definitely think there is some things to be a little bit weary about with a guy like Ngongba. I definitely do like the pairing though. I think when you do look at a guy like Boozer, who has been seeing a lot of doubles this year, being able to see him play off that makes a lot of sense why that cut play type is very dominant. And again, getting easy looks at the rim, finishing 80% as you mentioned. It's just a lot of dump offs and a lot of heavily assisted baskets. But I think when you look at his game, as I mentioned, nothing flashy. It's really just trying to see where that upside takes to the next level. And I really think it is deep rooted in A, first that perimeter shot actually like sticking and it becoming something, as you mentioned, having a 20.3 point rating, kind of taking that jump from essentially one 3-point attempt last season, again on minimal minutes. But all this to say is that the confidence is growing. And again, when you're able to watch a guy who, he's always had that skill in terms of facing up, attacking the basket, being super fluid in his footwork. So, being able to finish, layups, dunks at a high level, it really just shows you that he is just a very plus big on the court. And, especially with the integration of like more double big lineups in the NBA and, kind of the feel, I think that's something that we're going to be leaning a lot more heavy on in terms of his NBA upside. And, I think that was one thing that people are very worried about where, in the current day and age with, like I said, the double big lineups, having a big that has the kind of feel that he does, as you mentioned, in recent memory, I can't think of a big, maybe outside of Sengun, as you said, who really just kind of levels to him as a passer and just a guy that can create for others. It really opens up the avenues to build around guys like that and have front courts where, especially when you look at Duke having a lot of high-level shooters and wing options around him, he's able to get the ball in their hands effectively. And it makes sense why he does play so far away from the basket. And I think you would hope that hopefully through the season, he can be that kind of hub where he'll get a lot more included offensively and you can hopefully see the usage and scale up. But yeah, I think again, with a guy like him, he just handles his business. And I think sometimes when you look at guys like that, there's really no clear path to upside with guys like that, but just a lot to like with a guy like Ngongba. And I think throughout the season progressing, even just looking at Duke last season, they really, as a collective, weren't as hot as they were as they kind of ventured off into the turn of the new year. And they just really looked like a completely different team offensively. So, I mean, Duke, probably one of the best iterations of their team from an offensive lens. This is just a start. So I really do hope that Ngongba is definitely going to get included more. I think when you see a guy that is that patient around the basket, somebody that has a high level hands and he's really able to kind of, be in the mix in everything offensively, getting touches and being able to create for others and himself, you hope that kind of turns around more in the turn of the year. So yeah, definitely really like a guy like Ngongba.
Yeah, I mean, I agree on all fronts. I think it's good to bring up that Matt Powers post. He does some good stuff. And you're right that like Boozer's offensive ceiling, like it's a lot clearer with Ngongba off the court. I posted yesterday that Ngongba's defensive field goal percentage was like incredibly good with like Duke's when Ngongba's on the court, teams shoot 47.6% at the rim, which is 18th in the nation. When he's off, they drop to 54.5, which is 108th. So like he is holding up this defense. Like his rim deterrence has looked a lot better than his shot blocking, but overall shot blocking numbers are much more translatable. So we'll see like kind of what the measurements look like. If it really is a 7'4 wingspan, I mean, I kind of struggles to see what's wrong with the profile outside the rebounding. And then like I don't know, like you could get him in some really insane conversations. I really like Malawach's profile last class. I think Ngongba probably is in that tier, if not better, just because of the offensive utility. Like, I think he's personally, I would have him in like the top part of this class. I get if people are apprehensive, but having said that, like I've seen a lot more people with JQ top five, and he's got the same injury issues right now. So, I
Yeah,
mean.
and I think with JQ, which I think this would be a really good segue, and I mean, we can highlight a little bit of it briefly. Despite not playing with the ACL, I think, him coming into the NCAA last season for Arizona State at just 17, one of the best defensive prospects probably we've ever seen. And again, I think when we keep mentioning this afterthought with Ngong in terms of, what does the rebounding look like? What does the event creation on the defensive end look like? I think it's just a lot more tangible stuff with a guy like JQ, where he's just such a vertical athlete, somebody that can hang on the perimeter, as well as in the interior. And I think with him, one of the question marks is, that foot speed post injury. And I know that was something you were really worried about. last season when he was playing. And, you know, again, what is the sell with him after the ACL to have him bring Sahal in? And again, I think it was kind of arbitrary as we were heading into the season where you would probably see JQ defaulted to like a top five, maybe six at the lowest on majority of the boards that you would see preseason. And, you know, again, a guy that at 17 years old was anchoring that defense for Arizona State, one of the best block percentages. He at one point led the nation in the first like 2, 3 months in stocks generated. So he's clearly a guy that is just wreaking havoc on the defensive end. And that's not to say that he's not no slouch offensively. Some guy that just really does majority of his work around the basket, in terms of being a lob through a high level cutter, pure nor roll man. There were some glimpses of, you know, the perimeter shot, maybe not necessarily from three, but just from 2-point scoring that was a little decent. So, you know, there's a lot to like with a guy like JQ, one of the best defensive prospects we've ever seen. Now, what does that look like post ACL? We don't know. And I think the gripes that we have with Ngongo should as well be held with JQ, which probably has a more severe injury. So, you know, you really don't see that kind of same discourse or tag be held with both bigs. But again, I think when you think of bigs, I think just typically foot leg injuries are very dangerous to consider. And, you know, it's just a matter of seeing how they look in terms of the measurables. But yeah, a lot to like with a guy like JQ, but I would not 100% be surprised. I probably will join you in that conversation and having a guy like Ngamba in some really ridiculous conversations, maybe pushing top five, six territory. I think it's really easy to fall in love with a prospect that has the skill sets that he does. And it's to say a guy like Mollywhodge last year was in that territory, despite being a very poor rebounder, a guy where, you know, the lower body half really affecting him in terms of just his vertical leap. I definitely do add my queries and qualms with a guy like Mollywhodge, but all that to say, his profile was amazing and I loved it as well. What's to say that Ngongba can't provide that and more as the season develops? So again, a lot to like. And again, being patient with Duke in terms of their system, I think just traditionally their front court players, you know, oftentimes running through their man in terms of, you know, it being loser this season could of course affect why, you know, Ngongba's, you know, defensive field goal numbers, despite them being crazy, not getting a lot of event creation blocks, steals like that, him playing a lot more in the corner, off and around from the basket. So that could be a reason why, but hey man, a lot to love with Ngongba. I'm gonna join you on that conversation.
Who's your second ranked big on your board? I see Yaxel and Hans. Do you just want to stick to centers, or do you want to do the Hans conversation as well? Because I think that's actually been a really interesting debate over the past couple of days, Hans and Ngangba.
Yeah, I mean, I think that'd be a perfect segue. You know, I definitely, especially with Hannah Steinbeck, who just recently came back from an ankle injury, you know, posted a really great performance against UCLA, 29 points and 10 boards. I mean, with him, he was somebody coming into the season I was really, really in love with as a prospect. I had him as high as five or six preseason, and this was just coming off of his FIBA tape from the summer with Germany, where he was, you know, named top five in terms of, you know, the All-Star Five for the FIBA U19. He was pretty much the anchor man and the linchpin for Germany's team, pretty much leading the entire tournament in rebounding. I think it was like 14 rebounds a game. He's just a very, very dominant interior force. And he was somebody where coming into the season last cycle, actually, you know, when watching a lot more of, you know, Ben Seraph and Noah Singe at Ratio Farm Ulm, he was somebody where whenever they got their matchups against Wurzburg, where Hannah Steinbeck previously played before heading to Washington, I would always leave watching those games saying the two guys that I'm intending to watch today weren't the best prospects on the court. And it was this guy, this 18-year-old kid in the German BBL who at one point was leading their, I mean, whatever their equivalent of like the player efficiency rating is, he was leading the entire league at just 18 years old. So I was like, who is this kid and why is he just going stupid in the paint? Such a dominant interior force, a guy that just his hands are always around the rim, whether it's at a rebounding, being able to create events, being able to affect the game in terms of his passing. He was somebody coming into the season I was really, really high on. And, you know, in his early performances for Washington was super effective. Again, I think one of the biggest concerns that I had with a guy like Steinbeck was, you know, just the defense. You know, he's a guy that is such a strong interior face up post score, you know, traditional big man. And I think one of the qualms that I have with him is, for starters, the foot speed. I think with him, that really affects him on the defensive end. And, you know, especially in the day and age of the NBA, I think foot speed is such a killer for bigs. And I think guys of his archetype, where, you know, they're not these traditional jumping out the gym bigs. He's not some super athletic front court player at 6'11. He really struggles in space. And I think that's something that was very noted playing in Germany, playing in Washington and of course throughout the summer for Germany. I'm really just wary about him on the defensive end. I think there's not enough conversation about that end of the floor with a guy like Steinbeck, which again, I think when it comes to evaluating prospects, it's so fun to just get enamored with the good, and we don't really LARP on the bad. And I think it's very frowned upon. And again, as much as I can like a guy like Hannah Steinbeck, he is not a good defender, and I think that's something that I'm really weary about. And you know, it's already happening so far in the first couple of games. Again, much more smaller sample size given he's been out with injury, but that's definitely one of my biggest concerns. And I think as time has progressed, even though the performances have been playing much better, he's definitely starting to slip on my board. And that's again not really an indictment on him, but again, really just worried about what the defense looks like. And you know, if you're having kind of these concerns where the foot speed's not going to improve, he's not this really athletic, big. He's not somebody that can kind of replicate that with, you know, astute shot making or, you know, super high level interior scoring. It really puts you in a perspective of like, where is his role in the NBA? And, you know, I think some of the earlier discussions, people were saying if the shot becomes more, you know, sticks more, maybe a Dirk archetype, maybe a Şengün. And, you know, when I look at these guys at their size with very outlier foot speed, movement, just mobility, I really don't see that with a guy like Steinbeck. And I think it's very obvious, you know, he starts to dip a little bit on my board, but you know, a lot to like with him. So that's kind of my nuance with a guy like Steinbeck. And again, super fun prospect from the offensive end, you know, a guy super high feel. You know, we were having this conversation earlier, I think, with Latif in the chat about, you know, it really doesn't get mentioned enough, the kind of passing upside that a guy like Steinbeck does, which I mean, again, he's a very smart player. I think he's a guy that is very calculated in terms of, you know, he's not much of a risk taker. He's always going to take the high level basket. He's always going to take the high level look. And that's very reflective in his passing, which doesn't get mentioned enough. So, yeah, again, very high level offensive talent, but really doesn't get mentioned enough, you know, the kind of question marks that I have with him defensively. And, you know, I was having this conversation with like guys like him, David Mirkovic. It's these kind of international bigs that are very like technical in their offensive skill, but very wary in terms of, you know, their movement, overall general foot speed, and how that's going to affect them as a defender in the league. And I think it's always about translation, trying to see how guys, even in the collegiate game, what kind of things you're trying to nitpick that can affect them at the next level. And it's really just the defensive end for a guy like Hannah Steinbeck that's holding him back. But just from an offensive lens, a lot to love. But I don't know. I think you might have had a different opinion on what's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I agree pretty much on all fronts. I had him, you know, in the I think I tweeted I had him top five like at before the end of the year last cycle. And I agree, like you watched games with the Sengwe and Seraph, and especially in that playoff context. I mean, Hans was the best player on his team probably at 19 years old, and I mean the rebounding, he was one of the best rebounders. I think top three in his league in true rebounding percentage, and he's at. You know, I think he's third or fourth in underclassmen in offensive rebounding, which is just huge. It's a huge skill and something I value very highly. But the questions coming in were, I mean, as you mentioned, the foot speed, the athleticism overall, lack of verticality, those are pretty significant hindrances on like where he is able to play on the court. The most frequent question I get about Steinbach is he a four or five? And I mean, one of two things had to happen this year. Either the shot blocking, it looked better relative to league average overseas. But in order to play the five, he either had to be better as a shot blocker or he needed to have higher feel and steal requisites, you know, in the NCAA. And to this point, he's at like a 1.4 steal percentage. And when I think of like truly elite on at like, conventionally unathletic centers, a lot of the time I'm looking for a threshold of like two steal percentage. You think of Şengün and you think of I can't think of some others off the top of my head, but the two steal percentage threshold is very important for guys that have like obvious rim protection thresholds. I think he could hit that. I kind of doubt it, and that's why I've tended to fade him a little bit more to the rest of the class. And as you mentioned, I think it's less than an indictment on him. I really like his skills, but there was a world where the defense was just so bad that you had to fade. And this year, when he's on, teams shoot 67% at the rim, and when he's
Oh my
off, they shoot
goodness.
50. So that's a 17% swing in the wrong direction. Like teams shoot 17% better at the rim when he's on the court, and that's a more significant sample, like that's about the same number of possessions right now. So it's a real hindrance for his projection. And I mean, if he can't address that, I don't like where they play him. I mentioned this with you too. I think you and Latif, they play him in a deep drop. That's just bad hoops, like really bad positioning defensively for him. Like that's not what you should be doing. I agree, like he's exceeded my expectations as a passer. I think I'm interested to see if that maintains itself throughout the course of the season, but I don't know. If you're going to play the four, you need to have better touch and better, feel and defensive prerequisites. And then if you're going to play the five, you just need to defend at the rim. And he clearly can't defend at the rim. So it's an uphill battle for him to be like one of the best guys in this class, unfortunately. I mean, he's shooting like around 70% at the line, 71% at the line. But the 3-point volume has not been, what you would have hoped. I kind of wish they had him taking more of them because I thought that there would be, some sort of, some sort of leap there or just some sort of priority from his team to just have him shoot more perimeter shots because that is the question that they're going to get asked at the time of the draft. Like, can he shoot? Can he play the four? Because he can't guard. So, I mean, I like Hans. I think he has an elite skill and that puts him in a pretty good place. He's still inside my top 20 as of now. But I don't know. Also, like for the rim scoring, like I think he has touch, he has finesse, and post-ups are his second most popular play type right now, but he's shooting like kind of subpar at the rim for this archetype. It would need to be in the 70s for me to be like super, super in on the offense too, and it's just not. So, and I think part of that is that Washington needs to get him out in transition more. I mean, he put the ball on the floor yesterday against UCLA. And that was really impressive to me at lower levels. That was something that he excelled at as well. But just that needs to be more of a priority. I don't like how they're using him right now, but I also think that some of those natural limitations are pretty, they look pretty exacerbated in this context right now.
100%. I think, as you mentioned, like these limitations, I think they're trying to work with his game. And again, one of the biggest things, I think, even as you mentioned, he has the skill sets from, offensive lens, the size, the passing, rebounding, to really be effective as like a long-term NBA guy. Being able to separate himself from kind of like that mid to lower pack of the front court players in this class, I think there's a lot of production that you see, and on the back end, being able to say those limitations from just a general movement capability is really just kind of hindering him on both ends of the floor. And again, he would have to really supplement that rest of season in terms of production, being able to either become much more effective as a perimeter option, or really just getting the block numbers, steal percentage numbers up. And yeah, like I said, it's one of those things where it really just depends how Washington's running through them. I think they have a very, really interesting front court, just depth at Washington. And him, like you said, being able to kind of see him as that kind of 4-5 hybrid, it really gets you concerned. What is his outlook in the NBA if he's not able to guard out in space? If he's not a guy that's going to be able to kind of create events on the defensive end, and somebody that can kind of, as you mentioned, playing super deep in the drop. I just don't think that's effective for him at all, and that doesn't play to any strengths of his, if any, on the defensive end. So definitely something that you hope gets addressed. And like I said, there's just a lot to like with this game, but I think a lot that needs to immediately improve for the rest of the season for me to kind of continue to see him go higher on my board. But again, have him around that 17 to 19 range, and I think that's a very fair assessment of his. And again, just a lot to like with him, but you hope improves for the rest of the season, especially if we had in the conference play.
Yeah, I agree on all fronts. Let's talk about Yaxel, I think next, and then we'll get into more like brief explanations. I have one guy that I was curious to ask you about because he's been incredible. But Yaxel so far, I mean, kind of just an insane transformation from last year. The 3-point volume is up like a pretty significant amount right now. I mean, he's already shot 32 threes through his first 7 games, and that's, he shot 70 last year, so he's gonna hit that. and he's shooting 40% on them. So the 3-point volume is incredible. I mean, I think the most underrated part of Yaxel's eval for most people is that he's just an insane measurements guy. Like
Oh
he has
my
a
God.
7'4" wingspan, 6'9", like a bigger build as well. Like I think I can't think of the last time that a shooter and offensive player of this level had that set of anthros. I mean, who's a guy that hits those benchmarks?
Yeah, I mean, I have not seen it in recent memory. I think with a guy like him, he's just a very unique profile. I mean, a guy at 23 years old, he has really changed the game around under Dusty May. And I think when you think of this Michigan team, especially last season being able to employ Vlad Goldin, Danny Wolf, and kind of just revamping their entire front court room with Morris Johnson, Ademara, who is another guy we could potentially consider and talk about. But Yax has really been the guy that has stepped up this season, and he's really just showing you that he's just probably one of the most, if not the most, versatile players in the entire class, being able to just be, a hybrid forward, a guy that can do it from the inside, showing you now from the outside, really just being able to show you the connective skills, rebounding, stock generation. He's really just showing you from all fronts offensively, half court transition. He just can do it all. And that's not even to mention the crazy measurables that he has. He's just been a guy where, how much you really hold his age against him when he's just producing at a high level, second in the nation in BPM behind Cam Boozer. I mean, again, he's just a guy where his archetype is so in demand, especially at the next level. It's really just how much do you hold that weight into his age, and kind of where do you see his, do people see him as a low ceiling, high floor guy? I mean, that was kind of one of my questions coming into Michigan, where he's probably going to be asked to play more complimentary basketball than maybe where he was at UAB, where he was the guy. And especially where, if the shot wasn't hitting as much, what does the offense look like consistently just from the inside of the arc? But I mean, this season, I think the thing that probably excited me the most, as you said, is the 3-point shooting. With his most play type being spot up, he's shooting 43.5% from three, where, a season ago, it was just disgusting, being able to be kind of on the lower side of the 30%, around 31 to 32%. He's really just, and he's done it on volume. I think that's one big thing. Last season, the shooting was on really low 3-point volume, and I think this season he's really just completely changed his philosophy. And I think this is, partly in him, of course, and just the system too under Dusty May, where he's really been able to kind of ultimately maybe have three NBA guys in his front court alone, in Morris Johnson and Mara. But Yaxel, he's just been very astounding. He's been a guy that's been climbing just up and up for me. He was somebody even in my last cycle for the 2025 draft. He was a guy that was a top 25 guy for me. Really was a little questionable about him going back into school and really saying, like, how much more can he give you in terms of changing his draft outlook. And I mean, he shot it out the park in terms of addressing the shooting and just overall impact on the floor when the ball's not in his hands, in terms of playmaking, the defense. And he's doing it at a higher level, being able to play at the Big Ten. Michigan has played some very astounding competition, and he's really just shown out. So I think with a guy like Yak, so there's a lot to like with him. And, again, I think when it comes to this conversation of age with players, I understand. But I just feel like with a guy, well, he's just so productive, and he's clearly addressed his issues from, previous, and he just looks like a completely different player. And again, what kind of guy in recent memory, with the kind of anthros that he has, the production, and really just the player type, has came through the waters? I think that's something to consider. But I don't know, man. Yeah, Axel, he's a very great player. I felt like I was crazy by having this guy teetering maybe top 10, 15 conversation. Again, I know he's 23. I know that maybe he might not have the highest of upsides compared to a class that's very juiced out from, the underclassman perspective. But I mean, what's the sell to not have him that high? That's really my question. So a lot to like with a guy like Yaxel. And I mean, it's only the start of the season, and I feel so strong about him. And it's to say that there's just more that's going to get shown through him. And I think, watching him last season be the guy, and just reiterating this point, him being able to kind of scale down but show you a lot more effectiveness as a shooter, as a connector. I mean, you really can see the kind of change in his game, and how he will be able to 100% translate to the NBA and be effective, whether that's, at the hybrid four or five small ball lineups. I mean, I don't know. I was mentioning this with somebody about the double big lineups and just guys like him that can really just slot right in alongside guys that already have high level feel, guys that can play around the rim. I mean, he's just a perfect and dream 4 or 5 to play around. So a lot to like with him.
Yeah, and it's way less about like the percentages and more so about the volume, as you mentioned. Like just the spot up like stuff has been really cool to see. Now with the with that, like we swing pretty positively on Yak, so like both of us obviously. I will say that like one guy that kind of caught my eye last year and like his transfer up from like a kind of a lower quality school to a higher quality school is Danny Wolf. Like the 2-point scoring got a lot better playing under Dusty May. I mean, he just tends to do this with transfers when he has good teams. His teams shoot well from two, and they kind of have some inflated shooting percentages, I would say. But like that foundational change in his game, just shifting more to like spot ups, like playing like truly as a four, having those measurements, having those stocks, like you gotta have them like at least late lottery. It is, and that's conservative right now.
A
Like
100%.
he was draftable last year. He was old last year. I mean, that's pretty obvious. It goes without saying that, what is he, almost 24? He's gonna be basically 24 in the day of the draft.
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, he's a guy that could have got drafted last season, top 20, top 25, is going to be that probably this season. And, Michigan, even coming into the season, I was already weary about them just from a shooting lens. I mean, you see the kind of front court talent that they have. You see with the recent pickups in, their backcourt as well, a guy like Elie Cadeau, who I was like, this guy is going to be somebody that has to really move the needle in terms of shooting for this team to be as effective as they are on paper. And it's really been a guy like Yaxel who's been the one that's taken the biggest leap from a shooting lens. And again, being able to do that as a spot up shooter, 43.5% on good volume. I mean, the ceiling of this team really goes where he can take them. And that's crazy to say as a guy that kind of came from a mid-major team to, one of the best programs in the nation and really just being the lead guy and one of the most, if not the most impactful players in the country, behind Cam Boozer. So yeah, he is the goods, man. And I would not be surprised if he's somebody that teeters a lot higher than late lottery end of season.
And then the next guy we can get to, Adai Mara. I was very high on him to start the year. I had him seventh. I feel a bit more wary on it, but I always knew that this was kind of a outcome for him, that it would not look as good this year, and he'd end up like a 4-year guy, which is I think what it's trending towards. But I think outside of the turnovers, this is kind of what I expected, to be honest. And I mean, he's shooting 78% at the rim against top 220 comp, still has far too such. The free throws are not good. They are worse than what I thought they were going to be. But I mean, outside of those two areas, being the turnovers, being the free throw touch, this is still just such an insane player. Like just 7'4", incredible rebounder with like very plus feel at his size. The one of, if not the best shot blocker in the nation. Like probably has to be up there other than Hines, and he's playing on one of the best teams, or the best team in the country for most people, and he's played comp every single game. So like I think just the overall package of Mara is, it's so enticing, and I think it will probably end up with him not declaring and going back because of NIL and because like he could really juice his stock next year. But man, like if he could just get those turnovers under control, this is still that same level of player that like needs to be taken seriously in the lottery conversation, I think.
Percent. And you kind of seen some glimpses at that when he was at UCLA. I mean, he's one of the most decorated international talents pre-NCAA. And again, I think when you think of a guy like Mara, he was getting top 5 shoutouts throughout his freshman season and wasn't producing at all. Really wasn't being able to play as much, kind of had a reclamation project at Michigan. And I think he's turned it around. In terms of the conversation with him, he's somebody, even heading into the season on my second iteration of my board that dropped probably like a couple of days before the season started. He was, I think, 18th, 19th at worst. And again, it's something where you see the sheer size that he brings. It's just absurd. And I think one of, if not his best skills outside of the rim protection, is the passing skill. I mean, a guy that is at that size that can comfortably pass, and he just has an amazing vision. You see the kind of team that he has around him in terms, as I mentioned, Morris Johnson, Yaxel Lendeborg earlier. You know, you always thought a guy at that size that has that comfortable a feel, you know, if having spaces around him could really show you his value. And again, a guy that, you know, he's not the most fastest player, he's not the most above the rim or explosive player. He's somebody that is very comfortable, I would probably say, when it comes to, you know, defensive skill in terms of his drop coverage. A guy that can, of course, 100% be able to turn around the rim, one of the best shot blockers in the nation. You know, you've seen a lot of what typical seven footers are like, and he really just is not that. I think he's a guy that has a very unique skill set. I mean, the size, of course, the frame is a concern. You hope that he can fill that out more, but I mean, there's a lot to like with a guy like him, and I think it serves him better to get some more tape under him, and that probably would require a 4-year campaign out of him versus coming out this season. Again, I think my feeling of Mara start of season to where it's now has waned off a little bit, but that's not to say that I don't think he's an NBA guy. I think he could 100% have value in terms of rotational skill and just being, you know, a second or third big on a team. And I think that kind of next level up is really what the offense looks like. You know, a guy that, you know, especially for us as Minnesotans, you know, being able to look at a guy like Rudy Gobert and you see the inherent value that he brings, you know, ultimately a top 10 defense just on his own. And he's been able to do that for years on years, you know, even from his time at Utah, being able to kind of translate that to Minnesota. You see, I get the enamor with a guy like Mara and the kind of sheer size that he has and, you know, the feel that he brings. And I think with that feel, of course, you run to these problems with the turnovers and just the overall handledness of the ball. And again, he is somebody that kind of, you know, doesn't have the strongest of hands when it comes to handling the ball, which it's funny enough to mention, you know, the guy that's that comfortable with the ball in his hands from a feel lens, he just had a really big turnover problem. And I think we were seeing this even last year with a guy in Michigan in Danny Wolf. And, you know, could it just be a system thing? Could it be a player thing? Is this something where, you know, you don't want to limit the kind of possession that you have with a guy that really just it dies on him? But again, he is somebody that is an exceptional defensive talent, a really strong room to turn, and I think that's going to be his calling card that he's going to lead with if he does enter this class, if not next year. But again, he's just not a typical seven footer that you see, and I think he's definitely being able to kind of bring back the hype that he had pre-NCAA, and you hope that he can kind of address these issues when it comes to just finishing generally around the rim and being able to leverage the size. Again, it's not something that's going to come through strength, probably more through finesse or just surely just being taller than you. So I think a guy like Ade Mara, somebody probably at the beginning of the season I considered as a draft prospect this year, but probably makes more sense next cycle. But I think somebody to keep tabs on for the rest of the season, and hopefully you can improve those areas that we just mentioned.
Again, agree. Like I'm still very much in on the vision. I don't feel bad at all for having him higher than most. Shout out Dealey for taking that title away from me. I had one more guy that's like kind of a sleeper, kind of not. Malachi Moreno for Kentucky. There's obvious red flags, and obviously listen to the RCI pod. We went pretty in depth on this, that like the anthros are pretty bad and the rim finishing needs to be good, and it hasn't to this point. He's like sub 70% at the rim, which if you want to tell if a center is good, if you block shots, you need to finish at the rim, and that benchmark should be around like 70%. 68's fine, whatever. But if you don't do one, you got to do the other. And if you do both, you're probably good. And he's done one of them at a super high level, a decently high level. And then he's done the opposite as a rim finisher. And that's really important for him. You could have kind of forecasted this. I mean, he's a sub 9'1" standing reach guy. Even if he's like very tall outwardly, functionally, he's probably lacking a little bit in that department, to be honest. But like the peripheral stuff with him, the ancillary skills, I mean, 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio so far. I mean, he dunks the hell out of the ball. He has like some touch, like it hasn't shown up to this point, but I mean, I expected him to translate a lot better than this, and I think the anthros are just getting in the way. You could do like a 2-to-1 assist to turnover free throw rate above 50 query for centers, and you probably get some good results. But if you're not finishing at the rim, it's kind of just over. But if the rim finishing were to figure itself out, and I think there is a world where that happens, I still think this is just one of the best center bets in the class. Like, probably sh still should be in the lottery if that were the case, but it just hasn't been to this point. What are your thoughts on Moreno so far?
Yeah, I mean, 100% agree with you. I think, again, a person that even coming into the season, somebody that I think it was in the wintertime, and he was somebody I think I was talking with some Kentucky fans and just saying, like, he's a guy I didn't really like the physical profile coming into the season where, his not that he's a solid athlete, not the craziest, he's not the most explosive athlete. And as you mentioned with the Anthros, like, that coupled with the measurables, it's not helping his case, but he still finds a way to be productive in terms of, the ancillary skills, the passing, rebounding, being able to be a hollow shot blocker. But it's just the offense is really just a concern. And you kind of seen that a little bit earlier from the season at Kentucky where he really wasn't getting as much burn. And I think this is something in the back of your head watching Kentucky with a guy like Jaden Queens, who got a lot of money to be kind of the star front court guy. You wonder where if Malachi Moreno is still going to get burned throughout the season, if he's going to be a guy that kind of phases out. And I think that is very determinant on his ability to finish at the rim and really offer himself as a high level big under the basket. And I think that was one of those questions I was having coming in. A guy who really doesn't leverage his size enough for my liking. And I think you understand there's, very similar concern with a guy like, for example, like Alton, where, you see these guys that really play well around the perimeter and being able to facilitate and set up for other guys. And you really worry, like, if they can't finish the ball at a high level, if they can't be an above the rim athlete, what is their value inherently on the offensive end? And I think that's that coupled with, the bad measurables, it's really not helping his case. But I think from a profile perspective, as you mentioned with the ancillary skills, just so much to love. And I think I've really gotten to appreciate bigs in this class more, as you mentioned, a guy like Patrick Ngannou, guys that really can create and set the table for their team offensively. It's just being able to finish at the rim. It's just really being able to just score the ball and create offense for yourself. And, again, I think one of the more differences or nuances with a guy like that, a lot of his baskets are being created, his number one play type being putbacks and cuts. So clearly you're not seeing as much in terms of the unassisted department with him. But I think, again, you hope throughout the season that, like, something changes just from a production standpoint in terms of the scoring, just defensively, and being able to just offer himself more. Again, it really, you kind of shoot yourself in the foot, unironically, if you can't. You don't have the anthros, you don't have the high level athleticism explosion to kind of couple with, your inability to produce offensively or even defensively or lack thereof. So again, I think the idea of him a lot to like, and I think with the reality is really not matched up with that. And I think that's kind of where he's phased out of as like a one and done guy in my eyes. And again, it's just knowing that Queens is looming on the horizon, and it's just not going to help his case if he's not being able to finish the rim at a high level and already having issues and just limitations from an athletic perspective.
Yeah, he's just really polarizing because some of these skills are so outlier for his position, and then like in the bigger picture, it just kind of ends up a fade, which is unfortunate. But we'll see what happens with JQ back. I think there is a world where this swings more positively. I have since faded him a good bit from where I had him preseason, but like definitely still someone to watch on my radar. And then as for sleepers, I'm going to put this in the title because I think this is pretty hilarious. Where would you have Daniel Jacobson?
Daniel Jacobson, I think, especially coming into last season, he was somebody where, I got a chance to watch him USA Basketball, and I was like, this guy, we're big player. And I was like, especially with Purdue being able to just have this kind of pipeline of really getting high level 7-footers, especially ones that really don't extend the perimeter. I was one thing we're looking at a guy like Jacobson where he is very different than a lot of the footers that they've had at their school. And he's been somebody where last season with the injury out for the rest of the season, I think it was the first month into the season, really didn't get much tape on him in his first season. But the second season, though, even though it's been a little bit sprinkled with injuries. He has been somebody that's really impressed me, which I didn't expect coming into the year. I definitely knew he would be a lot more of a focal point. Didn't think it would be through him. I know, understand guys have like TKR, Braden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, like being able to run through your primary handlers, wings, front court options. I didn't think Daniel Jacobson would be a guy that would A, be able to affect the rim on both ends of the floor at a high level, somebody that can really rebound the ball well, being able to just affect and be a deterrent at the rim. And I think something that's kind of been a growth for him is just the overall touch and feel. I mean, I didn't expect him on my radar initially coming into the season, but he's definitely somebody that I've been watching out more for. And that's all respect to him. I think it's just a matter of the frame. I think I'm really worried. He's very undersized from a like physical profile lens, but I think the sheer size, kind of similar to the respect we were mentioning earlier with Mara, it's like the guy does so many great things that, you look at other bigs in this class and it's like these kind of skill sets that they have in terms of like the ancillary stuff, they just separate themselves and you hope that can they finish at the rim at a high level? Can they be able to still event create? And then also just the other things, the passing, being able to hopefully extend the ball into the perimeter. That's definitely something that maybe you might see a little bit on tape with a guy like Jacobson. And it's kind of pointing into that direction, hopefully, with the way that Purdue plays. And I think I really do like the way that Matt Painter utilizes his bigs, in previous seasons with a guy like Zach Edey, where, he's been just recently taking Storm with the Grizzlies. And again, it's he really knows how to utilize his front court talents. And I think Jacobson was a guy where I was like really curious to see how he gets utilized, especially after the foot injury. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, really weary about guys that have foot injuries, especially at a guy who, from a weight perspective is very undersized. And, I was already having concerns with him as is. So that's definitely something where coming into the season, didn't really think much for him from a draft lens, but he's definitely been somebody that's been on my radar. But what about you? What do you think?
I would take Mo. Name me five players who have been better than him this year.
Jacobson? Mean, I don't think any five bigs. That's the crazy thing. He's been extremely impactful. I mean, you clearly see, especially last season with the injury that he had, Purdue was begging for a front court talent that could kind of match the kind of skill set that he had. And even now, being able to pair him up with a more stout guy and Oscar Clough, I really don't see much NBA in that guy. But I think it's the way that he's being utilized around the basket as your anchor. And I think even the drop stuff has really been impressive. Again, it's like I didn't think he had this in him coming into the season. And I think that was something that, again, he's definitely been on my radar. And I think I did not expect any of that out of him, especially after the foot injury. And what did the foot speed look like? What did the rim stuff look like? Would he still have kind of that same bounce or explosion? And he's really just shot it out of the water. So definitely a guy I haven't seen much people even mention him at all. And like you said, can you name me five big men that have been more impactful than him and their team? And I mean, he's been one of the major reasons that Purdue has been really successful and one of the best finishing teams and just effective teams in terms of offense rating in the half court. So again, it's like I'm waiting. Tell me somebody.
I think he's my third or second best big in the class right now. I'm writing an article about Ngongba right now, and again, Avi guaranteed or 100 guaranteed on Twitter. He has talked about this like body mass feel index that he has, where like
The
feet.
cognition, that one,
Yeah,
right?
cognition. Yeah,
Yeah.
and like it's assist to turnover relative to BMI. 0.7's really good for, or like 0.6 is actually like pretty good for a 7'4" player. Like in the grand scheme of things, that looks pretty unimpressive. But I mean, Jacobson's probably gonna hit 10 BPM this year, surely. And there's. There's really only been three players that fit like the proxy of like high BPM, fits field thresholds, has free throw touch. It's just Chet, Edie, and Mobley. It's really it. That's the group that he's in right now of just being huge, having touch, having feel, and then having like functional rim defense, because there's obviously like Frank Kaminsky, Cody Zeller's kind of one. But Jacobson's at like a 18.5 block percentage on the year. Incredible offensive rebounder. And he shoots. He just shot four threes on the year at 7'4". Like, he is, and I think the wingspan's probably going to be plus four. Surely has to be, shooting 87% at the rim. Like, he's just in the Malawach Kalkbrenner mold. If this sustained itself, I mean, where do we put that guy who's a sophomore, who's bigger than Kalkbrenner, who's bigger than Malawach, who has touch, who isn't lacking in like the defensive rebounding that those two lacked in? Like, they, Malawach has not played to this point, so that's kind of concerning at the least, but I think people are overreacting a bit. Like, where would you have a sophomore Kalkbrenner with better defensive rebounding?
I mean, he should be the top 30 guy. I mean, when you consider even the cognition thing, as you mentioned, like he has feel, and a guy that is starting to get more confident from the perimeter, already adding to what he does on both ends of the floor from the interior, from as a deterrent perspective, as just a finisher around the rim, just general free throw touch. He's starting to fill his frame out. I think that's one thing where, given the injury, is he somebody that's going to be able to kind of put more muscle on? And he's been able to do that, being a lot more physical in the interior and being able to play off a guy like Clough, where he's kind of more the stout, behind the basket guy, and being able to, offer himself around the rim as a cut guy, pin and roll man, being able to just be that guy that plays, in the in between out little floater game. He just had a lot to like. And again, it's like, think of guys that you mentioned, which, two of the three guys that you mentioned, Chet, Mobley and Edie, two of three having the same foot injury that he had. It's like you understand, especially with the sheer size that they bring, just the general package that they have from a profile of high level rim deterrence and just being a defensive stalwart, but also the touch and the shooting indicators that they bring. I mean, how is he not a top 30 guy? Maybe even that might be too rich to be able to say maybe top 20 in terms of the skill sets that he brings. This is where I feel like just scouting have been very nuanced, and we really just, it's very the same cookie cutter approach. And a lot of people don't take these kind of gambles and look at guys that aren't conventional. Like I said, some of the guys that we've named just in this very big man list are not your conventional front court talents. And I think that's what's kind of expanded the NBA and just basketball in general when it comes to scouting, is guys just bring unique skill sets. And I think one of the big leaders in that conversation, just even today with this podcast, is really just centered around feel and being able to see guys just be super cognitive in terms of their ability to play around the talent, around, and that, of course, being able to affect them as a defender, especially around the rim. I mean, I don't think there is a better rim protector that we've named so far than a guy like Jacobson. So again, where does a guy like that rank on boards? I don't even see him on a board, or even seen him mentioned enough until you mentioned with Avi and you as well. So again, I think a guy like Jacobson is a serious, serious guy. I didn't even think that, and that's my fault. I think I was really weary, of course, with the foot injury and just being able to see, like, okay, really haven't seen much in terms of like Anthro talk with him since USA pre-NCAA. And there was that hype coming into the year, really just as a matter of like, how good does the touch and rim stuff really look? And I mean, he's blown it out of proportion for me. So definitely somebody that I'm gonna have on my watch list rest of season. And again, I think from a NBA executive perspective, I really have not seen much conversation about him. But it's we need to change that. We need to flip the script on that. And I think again, as Purdue continues to play a lot more high level competition, especially with the gauntlet that the Big Ten is, like, he's going to put the world on notice. And it's good that we have these kind of conversations, because like there shouldn't be much nuance with a guy like Jacobson. He is a clear, valuable talent in the front court position, and especially in a class where it's very void of like super, super elite high level bigs outside of the ones we mentioned in terms of like a guy like Ngangba. It's like that spot is for the taking for like center number two, center number three. He has to be in that conversation. So 100%. And I think this could probably segue into maybe like an underrated guy that I even think should be also in that conversation, a guy like Henry Vassar from North Carolina. I think he's been somebody that, again, another opportunity for reclamation under North Carolina, where, he's looked every bit an NBA talent in the front court position that he has. Being able to just really offer himself as, as floor spacer, being able to just be a super high finisher around the rim, rebounding at a high level, just very timely in his awareness as a defender. He's been every bit valuable for a team like North Carolina this season. And I think you've seen glimpses of that last season at Arizona. And especially with the Kribas injury, that was one of those things where, you start to see Vassar get featured a lot more, being able to kind of play with him and Carter Bryant a lot more in their front court. Like, they really showed a lot of value. And I think Vassar was definitely somebody that, even heading into the season, he was, I had made a thread about like my top five transfers heading into the season, and Vassar was my number fifth guy. And he was somebody where, you see the clear size. It's really just a matter of like, is the stretch skill, like, is it going to stick? And especially at a team like Carolina, where you really haven't seen very high level front court play from him in a minute. He's been somebody that's really changed it all around, especially with kind of the pairing of him and Caleb Wilson. He's been every bit much of a two-way hub on the offensive end and the defensive end, as advertised. So I think he's definitely another guy that really doesn't get much conversation or just nuance around him. And he's definitely been somebody that is definitely deserving of that conversation. Maybe this season, who knows? But definitely an NBA guy in my eyes, and as well as Jacobson. Yeah, what are your thoughts on that, maybe?
I like Vassar. I think he's been pretty good this year. He is another guy that like Jacobson, like some clear obvious things that people can have gripes with, like not the best rim deterrence guy. But yeah, he fits the benchmarks, and being 7 foot with clear touch is just such a, your margins are a lot bigger. I mean, he's not shooting well from the line, but like definitely has decent enough 3-point volume. He shot 15 on the year through 8 games. That's like very good for a 7-footer. Not lacking in the rebounding department, particularly. Like 19 is kind of low, but like it's good. I think it definitely is good for a guy with his level of touch. And he's just dunking the ball so much. Like that's really intriguing as well. Like very cool offensively slanted big that, like, yeah, another guy that should definitely be on NBA radars. I've really liked some of the high low actions they've done with Caleb Wilson and him. Like,
Oh yeah.
those are so fun just to have like two high field guys. But like, yeah, I agree. This is also a name that I've really liked. I'm curious what he's going to measure at because I haven't been able to find his measurements.
Me see right now. I know he was 7 on the dot when I last seen of him. Really, it's just the wingspan. What does that look like? I think it was rumored at like 7'2", 7'1", so not much plus, but again, it's okay measurables in terms of that respect. He's not the most above the rim player, but I think that's really been turned around the season with kind of the dunks. And I think even with the way that they're starting to play a guy like Caleb Wilson, a lot more doubles off the dribble and just playing him more, a guy like Vassar has really been able to kind of extend the floor out more for a team like North Carolina. And again, definitely a guy that is really intriguing. As you said, a very offensively slanted guy. But yeah, I mean, defensively, I don't know if there's really much to like there. Definitely a lot more on the heavier footed side, and really struggles in drop, and not the highest level of rebounding on the defensive side. So just kind of keeping and monitoring that. But again, very fun player. And I think in this class, it's really up for grabs when it comes to kind of like this next tier of bigs. And I think this is something that I had mentioned to you before the call, where it's like, you mentioned a guy like Ngongwa, and then kind of this little tier drop off with a guy like Hannes Steinbeck, maybe a Axel Landeborg. If you kind of see him in that respect, I could probably see him teetering more closer, like to in between both. And then it's just a drop off right after that. But that's not to mention guys, as we said, like a guy like Jacobson, where if the frame can continue to get filled out, if the touch and the shot really stick, it's like you could invite a lot more other guys, him, Mara. I think a guy that I initially in the season I was a little interested in, I think he's kind of dropped down a little bit, a guy like Alex Condon from Florida. I think some guys have kind of just waned off on my radar a little bit, but again, it's like this for a class that's not traditionally strong from a front court lens, there's a lot to take for the plate in terms of draft outlook. And again, one of those things where a lot of NBA teams are starting to kind of buy into the more double big lineups, front court options with feel, and just general plus indicators on the offensive end in terms of facilitating. There's a lot of options, to consider that could emerge. And, some mentioned in this very podcast. So definitely exciting to see, how what it looks like as we head into conference play during the new year. So yeah, man. I love the nuance with the front court talents.
For sure. Were there any other guys that you wanted to shout out and delve into real quick?
And I think you had mentioned it when it came to block percentage. I think the Najai Hines, that's definitely been a super sleeper guy beginning this season. And I think I was having a conversation with somebody about, a year ago, this was the way that we initially spoke about a guy like Thomas Sorber. Definitely him having a lot more offensive production and being able to kind of leverage like the super big body frame as an offensive guy. But like in terms of just sheer defensive impact. I mean, he has to be up there in the entire nation as just a freshman. And that's definitely a guy where, I think the offense is just super like a work in progress right now. But I think he's just extremely impactful around the rim. Probably a guy that we can talk about in next year, maybe 2 years from now, but super underrated guy to look out for in the future. Think guys to consider. I mean, it's I don't know. I know initially I was like maybe for example like Tomislav Vucevic, that was a guy really stretch option from Illinois. I really didn't see much stock in him, especially with the age and just athletic limitations. I think in watching Arizona, as you were mentioning, with a guy like Besar Krivas, he's been somebody that's been playing a lot more this season and showing some inherent value there. So that's been a guy, I think a guy last season that I was really interested to see this season, but given a foot injury, Magoon Guath from San Diego State. He was somebody that, again, another high-level shot blocker. He's been somebody with him and Miles Bird has really been impacting the defensive end for San Diego State. I haven't really been able to kind of catch up with him more this season, as I said, with a foot injury, but he definitely was somebody that was on my radar. Still a little bit there, just kind of needing more from him from just like an offensive lens. But again, I think this is a class that's really, really deep in terms of just high field bigs that really can impact the defensive end. It's really just kind of the offensive stuff that kind of takes it to that next echelon. So yeah, I think again, the table is very open in terms of front court talents that can kind of make their stake as to guys that can kind of step up as like that second, third, fourth best big in this class. And I think again, that conversation is very nuanced, whoever you ask. But I mean, I think just even in this conversation with you, there is a lot to like with the guys that we named, and even ones where they deserve a lot more respect than they're given.
Yeah, I agree, especially on Hines and Avisic. Those are guys that I think are real dudes for this year. I mean, as we've been talking about it, I think this is like a pretty good bigs class, to be honest. There's a lot of depth. I mean, obviously, so early on in the season, I feel like I have to keep saying that for everybody, but it's true. Like, people are going to regress to their priors to some degree. There's going to be some guys that fall off against comp, and we'll get there when we get there. But I've been a fan of the depth so far. Another guy, Najai Hines is first in the nation, in block percentage for underclassmen being freshman and sophomore. Fifth is Johann Grunloh, who I think is,
Oh my God, he's a stud.
I love Johann, dude. I love him to death because he's like an incredible rim defender with like good hands, really high feel. I mean, he shoots. Finishes at the rim, like hasn't really shot the well from the line, but like he shoots like volume from three, yeah, 5 threes per 100. Dude, this is a guy, another guy like Jacobson, where like I think he should be closer to lottery than more people. That will be my takeaway from this. Like I will say Jacobson, if he keeps doing what he's doing, probably going to be a top 10 player for, or is going to be a top 10 player for me if he keeps doing what he's doing. And I think Grunlow will probably be lottery. Because he draws fouls at a high level, he passes at a high level, finishes super well at the rim, good volume on his threes. He literally has no weaknesses. Like he, I think he passes the wingspan threshold as well. Like if he measured as at 7'4", I don't see a reason not to have him. Like, I mean, even higher than what I have him. If it's 7'4", if he measures with that level of wingspan, it's pretty much over. Like he's a real guy, and I don't know why he hasn't appeared on a single draft board this year that I've seen.
100%. I mean, he is again one of the standout German talents from the BBL that we were talking about earlier with a guy like Steinbeck, where you watch tape, well, at least when I was watching a guy like Noah Singa and Ben Seraph, I left leaving these films like there's a better guy that is younger than both, that is the clear best talent on the court, and it was Grunlow. And I'd made this mention, I think it was back in the spring when Virginia got his commitment, and then following that was Theis deRidder. I was like, this is going to sneak be the best front court in the ACC that no one is going to give love to. And to no surprise, they've been exceptional together. I think Theis deRidder more on the older side, 22, 23. He's not a draftable guy, hailing from Belgium. He and Grunlow have been special. And I think there are some games that you leave watching, like this guy is just block machine, and he's just a guy that is just feasting on the interior. I think one thing, as you mentioned, the rebounding. I mean, a guy 13%, offensive rebounding, 20% from the defensive rebounding. I mean, he's just a guy that his hands love the ball. And that goes on the defensive side, on the passing side, at the finishing side, even the shooting. It's been really intriguing. 31% from three this season, decent volume, 16 shots already. I did not think he was going to be this good. I definitely was saying, like, I'm really intrigued with this guy. I mean, he's, again, one of the super high feel international talents, really good mobility. I think that was something that kind of initially separated the conversation with a guy like Steinbeck when I was saying he probably is going to be one of the best international talents. And now, again, I think Steinbeck was just a lot more offensively slanted than he was. So I think I was a little bit worried on that end. Like, where does the scoring come from consistently for a guy like Brunlow? But it's like when you watch him play alongside a guy like DeRitter, you see where his value's at. And that's not even to mention what do the Anthros look like? And if it really is a true 7-3, 7-4, he's going to get in some nasty conversations. And I think it's going to be through us too. And I really, really like a guy like Brunlow. I mean, when you see the skill set that he has really and truly no flaws in retrospect. He's a guy that can pass the ball at a high level. He's a guy that can rebound the ball on both ends of the floor at a high level, can shoot the ball, can finish the ball at the rim. Super impactful. I mean, the measurables look good on tape. It's like, where does this guy have a weakness? And he's just a freshman. And again, I feel like it's one of these things where there are so many talented underclassmen front court guys that really aren't getting much spotlight. And it's, I think, with the inclusion of more international talent, I think you're going to start to see this narrative shift where you're starting to see a lot of these international guys lead this conversation. I mean, we're starting to see it a bit now with a guy like Hannes Steinbeck. I mean, previous with a guy like Eddie Mara. But Grollo deserves to be at the top of that conversation for what he is giving you as a big and, a near 9 BPM right now. I mean, this guy is one of the main reasons that Virginia is one of the best offensive rated teams in the country, one of the best defensive rated teams in the country. And he's doing this on such low volume. So it's like, what's to say when the usage and the offense grows, which is still a work in progress. Again, I think that's an amazing shout. I really do like what Grownup provides you. And I think the only person that I've ever seen mention him outside of you was, I think, NBA Draft Point. And I didn't even think there was still enough love for him, even watching now and getting a little small sample size, through 7 or 8 games for Virginia. He's unreal, man.
He's been so good to this point. I mean, we'll see what happens against comp. The stocks have fallen off, and like I think he's played a game, if I remember correctly. I just closed the tab on my board, unfortunately. But with that, I think we did good work on these guys. I will have all of Mo's stuff in the description for his Twitter. He does incredible film breakdowns. I'm sure we're gonna do, a few more collabs on the year. We're going to get
Oh,
the draft spaces
yeah.
started pretty soon, right? Anything
Definitely,
else you want to
definitely.
shout out?
Man, shout out to you. You were somebody where when we were having this conversation about getting this episode going, I think it was back in September, and being able to see your growth just substantial. I'm just so proud of you, man. Like, I love the work that you've been doing, and just being able to see you be so impactful in the space and see you grow. It's like, I have so much love for you, man. And like I said, I'm super excited to even be on this platform with you and for you to just be able to speak some high level hoops. And I'm just super excited, especially with this class. It's just so much in store. We're just a month into the season, a month into the cycle, and it's looking very promising. And I'm super excited for what's in store for you, man. And like I said, man, 2025 was a great year, and I want to see what 2026 is. So I'm super excited. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you, man. And yeah, man, shout out to Finn for the opportunity, and really excited to connect more. Rest of the cycle with spaces, podcasts, just being able to just produce content together, man. So thank you so much, Finn. Really appreciate it, man.
Made me a bit emotional on this podcast. I appreciate it, bro. I wouldn't be here without you for real. We did a lot of stuff last cycle that I really enjoyed. So, again, I wouldn't be at this point without you. So, I mean, all the credit goes to you. I will continue to collab. I really appreciate the kind words. Damn, man, that was good. with that. This will be episode 25 of the Double Bonus. Thank you to Mo. Again, we'll have all this stuff in the description below. Have a good rest of your day.